Oh, we also didn't talk about the fucking power of tea again.
Oh, yeah. We'll do that. Well, you want to do that real quick?
No, I'm just angry that tea happened to bring somebody back to life again.
Tea is the cure for everything in Doctor Who.
Tea, the life bringer.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I'm just a curious little owl.
I've got a whole bunch of rats here I'm going to feed you as we watch the episode.
Oh boy, can I eat them whole?
Of course you can.
Just in one stupid dollop. Hey, Zach, when we're done with the episode, can I barf up all of the bones and fur?
Of course you can.
Hooray.
What kind of boyfriend would I be if I didn't let you barf up all the bones and fur on our house floor?
A bad one.
Today we are looking at Series 5, Episode 11, The Lodger.
The Lodger.
Last episode, as you pointed out, had a very famous special guest. This episode also has a very famous special guest, one James Corden, star of the movie musical Cats.
Ooh.
Yes, this was...
Yikes.
I think this was before
That's not a special guest star. That's a Doctor Who was burdened with James Corden. And I say that. I did enjoy him at the time when he was in Into the Woods. I do think that somebody else would have made a better Baker, but
yeah, this was before he like really became more famous, before he started doing a lot of movie musicals, obviously before he was doing the Late Late Show. This was honestly my first introduction to James Corden. So when I started hearing that people didn't like him very much, I was a little surprised because I actually quite like him in this episode. I think he's very charming. I think he's well cast. We will watch that a little bit when we get into it. But what might you be expecting from James Corden on Doctor Who?
What am I expecting from James Corden on Doctor Who? I don't know. Just based off of the thumbnail, he is. Can I be mean for a second?
Yeah, go for it.
He is like considerably bigger than he is now.
Yeah, he definitely was still like I think he was leading into a type then. He was a character actor.
Yeah, so there's a part of me that's like, all right, cool, he's just gonna be like the nice big guy, because that's just kind of the type. I don't know, dude.
No, that's fair. Well, I don't need you to do too much of a prediction, because that's mostly safe for the Cassie Profassi. I do have a couple questions for you here. This one is a little more serious. So this is a companion light episode. Amy is, for the most part, in the TARDIS while the Doctor is doing his own adventure here, similar to Midnight, if you remember that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think the Doctor can't get back to the TARDIS? Is it A, because the TARDIS teleported somewhere else and he doesn't know where? Is it B, the TARDIS is caught in a time loop so he can't get on board? Or C, someone stole the TARDIS and he has to get it back?
I like the idea of, I think time loop is always an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll go with time loop.
All right, with the time loop.
Yeah, that idea sounds like more fun and I don't feel like sitting here thinking too much about it.
You know, that's absolutely fair. And then the other one is a little sillier of a question. Do you think the Doctor can play soccer? Sorry, it's a British show. Football.
Can the Doctor play football? I mean, he is awfully good at running.
Mm-hmm.
And
Matt Smith is clearly a fit gentleman.
Well, because I'm trying to think of like, because my knee-jerk reaction was no, but I went, hang on, The Doctor is a runner, and that's like his whole thing is that he is a scrambly man.
Mm-hmm.
Scrambly men tend to be pretty decent at a handful of things.
Okay.
I'm wondering how good the Doctor is at dealing with extra things while he's being a scrambly man.
Mm-hmm.
So it's can really a question. With a ball? Yeah, it's really a question of can the Doctor scramble with a ball?
How much golden retriever energy does he have?
I'm going to say yes. I have convinced myself. I think that the Doctor is not the best soccer player, but I think he can play soccer.
Alrighty then.
Or football.
So we will find out together if the TARDIS is stuck in a time loop and if the Doctor can bend it like Beckham as we watch The Lodger.
Hey, folks. Johnny the Zombie coming back at you again. I've told you before about the wonders of HelloFresh, but this time, I'm the one looking for something. Or more accurately, someone. You see, while I certainly enjoy living the zombie bachelor lifestyle, it gets a little lonely living all on your own. After all, what's a zombie bro like myself to do with all this dead space in my house? So that's why I'm on the hunt for a new roommate. Someone clean, well-mannered, and with a good head on their shoulders. Not for eating. I'm really bad at budgeting. I've got a spare bedroom with an attached bath. I have a deep freeze for all the body. And you can even have the garage all to yourself, since I don't drive as much as I shamble. So if you're interested, just dial 555 and we can make this happen.
And we are back from The Lodger. So what'd you think, Cassie? What'd you think of that big old cat? Is it Busta for Jones? Is that who he was?
I think so. I thought you were talking about the Himalayan on the stairs. I love that cat.
No, I was talking about I was talking about a child.
Busta for Jones is the star of the show.
What do you think about The Lodger?
It was fine.
Yeah, it's a cute little almost palate cleanser after like how emotional the last one gets.
Yeah, and considering that this one is a Amy Light episode, it doesn't feel like it moved pretty quick.
Yeah.
And like, yes, she's not actively the companion in it, but she's also not on a spa planet. You know, she's actively still participating in the episode.
Yeah, part of the story is about getting her back because the TARDIS is stuck in this dematerialization loop.
Yeah.
But yeah, the companion for this episode really is Craig, played by James Corden.
And even he isn't.
Yeah, it's more that he's the guy that the Doctor is having to like follow around for the sake of like pretending to be a real person.
Jeez.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for this episode. Like it's not like the greatest episode of Doctor Who ever. It's not even really better than the one that came out before it, but it's
not bad.
It's sweet is what it is.
It's one of the episodes that we've seen in the most recent history where I don't have a lot of like ravishing things to say about it.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, yeah.
It's worth noting that this was originally, the idea for this episode was originally written for David Tennant. This was written where Rose and her mom were stuck in the TARDIS in a dematerialization loop, and Matt and David Tennant would have moved in with Mickey. So I'm assuming that there would not have been the Sophie dynamic.
No, which I like.
Yeah, I think it almost needs it because that's the through line of the episode. So maybe there would have been, and it would have taken Mickey in a very different direction.
Well, because I like that at the end, you find out that the ship that is pretending to be the second floor of this flat is trying to leave, therefore trying or using people who want to leave to get it to go, which then after you find that out makes you think like, oh, all of these, like there was like the teen walking down the street, and then I'll just, I think that woman was a hooker.
They do
had a very bad date with a very not awesome person. But after you find that out, you then start to think like, oh yeah, like that makes sense. Like even Sophie specifically says not moments before that she wants to be a conservationist and leave to work with orangutans and, you know, has the opportunity of joining a volunteer program to work with the monkeys. And, you know, the doctor, I even wrote it down because I was like, that's actually kind of a nice thing is they have to work out what's keeping you here.
Yeah. And what was keeping them here was each other, which is a very sweet, like simple kind of romantic notion.
It's something where it's like, this feels like the type of episode, and I think I've said this about things in the past, but this one is like the most recent one now that feels very collegiate in the way that you can really sit down, dissect it, and unpack it.
Yeah, the structure is very simple.
Yeah.
Even then there are still, like there are scenes that feel almost like plot cul-de-sacs, like when the doctor goes off to play soccer.
Well,
which is really just about really developing the dynamic between Craig and the doctor, because that is really the rhythm of the episode.
Well, like, because it's the doctor being the star of the team, and then it pans over to chubby Craig in his little shorts and his too tight jersey. They even say he's starting to look like his couch.
Oh man.
I'm not much of a traveller.
I can tell from your sofa.
Sofa?
You're starting to look like it.
Thanks, mate. That's lovely.
Yeah.
It's not nice. It just sucks that that is, like, the plot device is that, like, oh, yeah, Craig, he's just kind of a...
He's fat!
I mean, you said it.
I mean, I'm sure there's a part of it where, like I said, James Corden has since lost a noticeable amount of weight. Well, so I do think he's leaning into that as part of his like character actorness.
It's the trope. It's the trope of like the nice guy. He's just comfortable and safe and, you know, doesn't really have a lot of ambitions and is just complacent in where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
Not like you.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone would ever think I'm anything like James Corden.
No. Absolutely not. Hey, did you know for a hot second I had a crush on him? Can't imagine why.
I would never in a million years do karaoke in a crosswalk.
Wait, what?
That was part of his one of the things that got him in trouble was that one of his segments involved doing like a lot of musical numbers in a crosswalk in LA, and so it would create traffic. When I do carpool karaoke, I'm actually driving the car.
Zach, this isn't about you. This was never about you.
I'm just saying I'm nothing like James Corden.
No. Although this episode did make me start to think about something. Because you had said, like, right after Craig opens the door and it's Matt Smith and you're like, or,
yeah, because when Craig opens the door, he's like prepared to go tell Sophie, I love you.
I love you.
Well, ask her, because I'm your new lodger. Do you know, this is going to be easier than I expected.
And he's got this little shit-eating grin on his face.
And after that moment, you'd said, like, can't you see why he's my favorite doctor? And I think it's because, I think that there is a, like, not coincidental reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first two doctors of this, like, new season, or this, like, new series has been Christopher Eccleston, who got put in the tremendous role of trying to figure out what the doctor would be like after having seen his entire race die before his eyes.
Yeah.
Because of his personal actions.
Mm-hmm.
There is a tremendous amount of weight that Eccleston brings to the Doctor. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that during his time as the Doctor, things were happening that he didn't like. And he was incredibly unhappy as that role. So when Tennant comes in, it kind of feels like, ah, a fresh start. But Tennant's run starts weird because everybody's reactions towards the Doctor is, it's just weird. The energy is odd.
Yeah, some of the episodes were written for Eccleston because they didn't know that he was going to have to leave, because they didn't know he was going to leave the show as soon as he did. So they had already just figured out how to write Eccleston and then immediately had to pivot to writing Tennant.
And it's so David Tennant is likable right out the gate just because it's David Tennant.
Yeah, it's baby girl David Tennant.
You don't not like David Tennant, but he just doesn't feel like the Doctor until much later into a season.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Smith feels like his version of the Doctor almost immediately.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because the writers had now two different people
mm-hmm.
to practice with. And now, you know, you have Matt Smith that is now the third child, basically, where things have a rhythm has been found. And they even spend a considerable amount of time with. And I know that it's not his first recording episode, but mm-hmm. for the sake of this podcast and for the sake of like the Doctor's story,
mm-hmm.
his first adventure is literally him trying to figure out what he, like who he is,
mm-hmm.
who this version is,
yeah.
in the most manic way he can imagine by eating all of Amelia Pond's food and stealing a bunch of people's clothes. Like that's, you already, like from that first episode alone, you already get the impression of what this version of the Doctor is like.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps heightening and getting more solidified and confirmed as the episodes have gone on. So I think why a lot of people like Matt Smith as the Doctor is because there is no like growing pains with Matt Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He is who he is right out the gate.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Matt or Steven or both, but there were a lot of very strong decisions made with Matt Smith with the 11th Doctor immediately.
Like there were decided characteristics and qualities.
Yeah, by the time they end the 11th hour and he steps through that like montage of the other Doctor's faces and he says, "Hello, I'm the Doctor." By that moment, you understand everything about like the thesis of his character.
Yes.
Like there's a lot of other colors that we explore as the season goes on. We get a lot of like the sadness that permeates within him.
Well, yeah.
But in that moment, we get like, okay, this is the adventure we're going to be on for the next couple of seasons.
Particularly because he's also decided like what he is going to dress in.
Mm-hmm.
You see the jacket with the little arm, the like elbow pads and his bow tie.
Mm-hmm. And his suspenders.
So there's already like an aesthetic decision that has been made
mm-hmm.
from that moment on and is just carried forward. And any opportunity that they get to have him say, "Bow ties are cool," they do.
Yeah, it's a very strong characterization and one I really like. I think I described him once to you as a male Miss Frizzle, where it does feel like he's just like, "Hop on my magic school bus. It's a TARDIS."
He's very Professor Foxtrot.
Yeah.
Just a little manic, but also not quite as like, PG.
Yeah, it feels like this character could have easily have been the star of like some educational series, like a Bill Nye type, right down to the fact that I think Bill Nye also occasionally wears bow ties.
Oh, well, yeah, that was it's also a thing for him.
Yeah, I think this episode is a very good encapsulation of that because we get him separated from Amy for most of it. So you really get a feel of like what he is like on his own. And there is just this sort of, almost like a child that has too much candy, kind of energy bouncing off of him.
He does have like fourth grade sleepover. Mom's out of the house, and we have so much Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, and so and you pair him up against someone like Craig, who is not necessarily like a stick in the mud.
He's not boring. He's just comfortable in the mundane. Yeah,
like what he likes doing is pizza booze telly with his girlfriend.
Not like us.
We do pasta water telly.
Yeah, we do pasta podcast telly.
that's exactly what we do. Yeah,
not at all the same.
Yeah, and so I like that they had this episode to sort of at least let the doctors this version of the doctor breathe on his own. So we understand, especially because for someone like Tennant, part of what made him work was that he always had a new companion every season for him. And so we got his vibe, and every season was really about how you married that with this new companion.
Mm-hmm.
Smith really just has Amy, Rory, and then a third character you have not met yet. So he doesn't have that same vibe. So it's nice to have these episodes where you do get to see how the Doctor works on his own.
Mm-hmm. I like him having the goal of this episode to be, or I like him having the goal of this episode to pretend to be human.
Amy at one point tells him that normal people watch television, they go to the pub, they play soccer. And so as soon as he gets offered the chance to play soccer, he's like, yes, I should do that because I am a human and I shall play soccer with my human feet.
I am normal human person. I do. Is that the one with the sticks?
I shall kick the human soccer ball.
I will say, watching him play soccer, though, did confirm this man's a border collie.
Yeah, it was a very sporty, and there was some dog energy coming off him for sure while he was playing.
Oh my god!
Because it's like he's got his hair like all shaggy and it's flipping all over the places he's running around.
He's running around real fast. He like eye on the ball. Like he's literally hurting the ball.
Yeah, and he's like cutting in front of other people so he can play with the ball sooner.
Yes. Have you seen people that do have herding dogs, but they live in more suburban areas? What they do now instead?
No, I have not.
So most of the time, if you have any kind of herding dog, they want to herd.
Mm-hmm.
That is their purpose in life. So typically, like in more, I'll say more city settings.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, unless they have some kind of outlet, they'll start like, they will literally herd people into the room. A very good example of that is our friend's dog, Panko. Panko is part corgi. If you get up and leave the room and he's not emotionally prepared for you to do that, he will jump up and start biting at your feet until you sit back down.
I've never seen him do that because I've only ever seen him in parties.
At parties, he's having an existential crisis usually.
Too many people to herd.
Yeah, basically. But if you're just there with his mom and dad and you are like, okay, I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom, he gets up and starts biting at your feet because he doesn't want you to go. He loses track. And so now what people have started doing is giving their dogs like these big, effectively like tough yoga balls. So they're large,
mm-hmm.
but with the intention of giving this dog something to physically run after and bite and herd and, you know, try to keep it in a spot.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Matt Smith with the soccer ball and then him talking to the cat.
Yeah, it was a very,
I'm not saying he was very dog-like in this. He wasn't not dog-like.
I do like this description because I've always felt that Matt Smith's Doctor does sort of walk this tightrope of occasionally drifting into like manic pixie dream boy energy, where he just sort of is like this ethereal character that shows up and changes everyone's lives with his weirdness.
He hands Craig a bag full of money and says, is this rent? I don't know if this is enough. Is it too much? I can't count.
Seems like a lot. Looks like a lot.
Yeah.
It's just 3,000. That was something I was going to say. The reason you might have thought that that one woman was a hooker is because the first thing they say is the thing they say right before cutting to her is Sophie pointing out, if he's just got $3,000 in cash and he goes by the name the Doctor, there's a chance he's a dealer.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's a very real chance that your brain was just like them talking about, you know, nighttime debauchery. And then they cut to a woman in heels and you're like, hooker.
It was the heels and the, like, I understand the year is 2010, the year of the fat, chunky belt. That was like a waist cincher belt, though. And it was the big, like, step on my neck shoes.
Yeah, that very, I mean, she very well could have been coded that way.
She was also crying a whole lot. So I was like, I don't know. This, if we're going with the theme of this alien, this ship is trying to get people that want to get out.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a person who that is your only means of money or your means of occupation,
mm-hmm.
usually it's not because you willfully chose that life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very real chance. We don't need to go into the ethics of sex work on this podcast. Not right now.
Yeah. Going back to our discussion on Matt Smith versus Tenet, one thing you can get that's a really strong, like, here's a difference maker, is that when Tenet was using his, like, weird psychic powers, he would, like, hold your head very gently and, like, press his fingers to your temples. Meanwhile, Matt Smith is just like, okay, here we go. Bonk. Forehead to forehead smash.
Yeah, it hurts him as much as it hurts the other person.
Yeah, just, all right, there's general information. All right, now specific information. Bonk again. This is why I have this art installation in the middle of the room I'm renting from you.
Modern art. Which also, that was a fun little callback. On their fridge, they have like a postcard for the Van Gogh exhibit.
Yeah. So it's got to be a different Van Gogh exhibit because the Van Gogh one from the last episode is in Paris and they're in the UK again.
So. Well, yeah, but it's still a nice little.
Yeah, it is a nice little connective tissue, and also points out all the more that they knew the last episode is going to be emotionally a lot. And so that's why they put this one here so that the show isn't just going to be like emotion, like that level of emotion all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. I think this. Like, these are nice pairings because you do have that last up. You do have Vincent and the Doctor that is very, like, complex and heavy,
mm-hmm.
And pulls a lot out of you. And then you have this one that's basically just like a cute little love story that where the Doctor is kind of involved.
Well, yeah, because the ending thing is Sophie having to, like, break herself free from this ship. And then Craig being like, he said he didn't want me. He said that he couldn't use me. And then the Doctor saying, it's because you want to stay here. Tell us why you want to stay here. Say it with all your heart.
Say it with us, audience. It's Sophie.
To which I responded with, wow, it was the power of love. Always fucking is the power of love that makes the space alien ship implode and make the floor disappear. That's a saying.
I mean, it was a very, like, unique aspect to the power of love, where it's not just like how much you adore somebody, it's how much of your life you're willing to put on hold just to be near somebody. Because you care more about them than you do about the other things you want to do in your life.
Mm.
Where there is something very, like, human to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to be able to say, like, yeah, no, I totally get it. I am in that boat right now.
And you resent me for it every day.
It's not resenting you. It's the me having this opportunity to find a better job for me, but then also being like, I have the option of packing up my bags and moving and traveling the world, seeing the world. I could do a solo trip. And me going, no, there's nothing for me in Spain or Madrid. I disagree with that. I would love to go to Spain, but also, ugh, I can't solo trip. That shit's scary. Need a man with a bow tie to whisk me away, spirit me away in a blue TARDIS.
Yeah, that's the real benefit to the TARDIS is no planes.
Oh my God, no TSA?
Yeah, no TSA. Keep your shoes on the entire time you're in the TARDIS if you want.
I don't have to have my bag looked at because I have too many snacks if I go in a TARDIS. three times now because I don't pack. I pack with the intention of everything in this bag is the only thing I will need for my 3-day excursion, snacks included. Every time I've done that, they've had to pull my bag off to the side and investigate it because I simply carry too many snacks. My bag is literally like 1/3 toiletries, 1/3 clothing, 1/3 snack.
For every shirt, you put in one bag of pretzels.
Yes. I was bringing with me the last time I traveled like 3 pounds of coffee beans. And they pulled it over, opened it up, looked at me, looked down at my bag, looked back up at me, and I went, they're beans from where I work. Please, I'm running late for my plane. It's coffee beans. Fucking take one if you need.
I do like the... Going back to the episode, I do like the evolving dynamic where Craig just gets increasingly more jealous of the doctor.
Oh, because he's better at soccer than he is? He's more handsome?
At one point, Sophie calls him gorgeous, and he very clearly is just like, shut up, Sophie. You're supposed to find me attractive, not him.
Well, yeah, and then the next time Sophie sees him, he's shirtless.
Yeah, he's wearing... No, not
he's
the next
wearing
time.
A towel.
It's the same time. That's the same moment where he's only wearing a towel and holding Craig's toothbrush.
No. I thought she meets him before.
No, because they were talking about the doctor on the phone the night before. That was when she says that he might be a drug dealer. But she first meets him when he went to go protect him, thinking he grabbed the sonic screwdriver, but instead grabbed Craig's toothbrush and a towel.
I misremembered that moment. Horrendously.
Yeah, but she goes, he never said he was gorgeous, which is very funny knowing that the two alternates we have here are people calling Matt Smith gorgeous or Amy Pond talking about his big chin and his doofy tie.
Or me saying he's a scramble man. I think I'm the most correct.
All three
of
these things can be true. He is very handsome. He is kind of doofy looking. And also he's a scramble man.
He's the scrambliest of men.
Yeah. I like that it's building. Like, he's better at soccer. He seems to be better at his job because he shows up immediately and impresses everybody and can kick off clients without anyone pushing back.
I really love that the boss was like, no, I love him.
There's a very like British dryness to that level of joke where it's just like, no, don't talk mean about the doctor. I like the doctor. He's been here for 2 hours. You've worked here for 7 years.
I love that.
Yeah. And
that's
then
so stupid.
So Craig is ready to like throw him out. And he's like, what did I do wrong? And so the doctor's only solution is, as we said, bonking him on the head.
Yeah. The hardest of bonks.
Yeah. Not. Oh, man.
He's a bonky boy.
Yeah, I do. I am glad that I really do enjoy this episode. It's very simple and it's very sweet.
Like, it's, you know, you know that an episode is good when we pretty much wrap up talking about it after just shy of 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
27 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because, like, there's also not a lot to say about this episode.
Yeah.
It's perfectly palatable and fine.
Yeah. It's the popcorn of Doctor Who episodes.
The popcorn of Doctor Who episodes. I do like that.
Yeah, and it's right.
I will say I'm also noticing some more Moffatisms.
Oh, yeah.
When things are kind of suspenseful and a little scary, there's a sound that's like a. You know which one. You could play it right now.
Wow.
That sound, that's very indicative of like, ooh, things are getting kind of scary. It's not Weeping Angel scary.
That might be less a Moffatism and more a Murray Goldism.
Maybe. They could work together.
Yeah,
I don't know.
For sure. I mean, yeah, I mean, Murray Gold, I'm sure, has to work with all of the producers. But yeah, Murray Gold is the composer.
It's
for the
very,
show.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is one of those, it's not like an instrument, but it's like an instrument of sound horror where you take the thingy from a cello. Yes. And like there are some like instruments that where you use those elements, but you like instead of playing a cello with it, you're playing saw, a giant piece of sheet metal where you get these like very scary sounds. There's a guy on YouTube that has so many instruments, and there's one that's just called Scary Sounds. And guess what? They're all pretty scary.
Yeah, and it's nice to have this kind of palate cleanser right now, because in addition to the last episode being very emotional, the next two episodes are the series finale, or the season finale.
Well, because we're glazing over. We're just soaring right over the doctor telling Amy that she needs to write the note for him.
So go find a red pen, because it's very important that it's red. And so she starts digging through his pockets, and she fishes out her engagement ring.
However, when she fishes it out, we see she has like a memory of the crack, mm-hmm. which there's also a crack in the apartment mm-hmm. behind the fridge,
mm-hmm.
which is unimportant.
You had sort of expected that she would think that the doctor was proposing to her.
I still do.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, having her see the ring and then get a flash of the crack.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me think that there is a good chance that this is a device to help her remember Rory. And also, spoiler alert, I saw the thumbnails from like in two more episodes. I can see that fucker comes back.
Yeah, Rory does come back. So, you'll have to find out how, though. That'll be quite the curiosity.
Well, yeah, but so that's the like spoiler alert. I have unintentionally seen that small bit.
Yeah.
And so now I do think that I had a good case to be made of Amy questioning the doctor's kindness towards her by taking her on all these cool little trips and then her finding the ring. But I'm now thinking I might be wrong.
Yeah. I was curious to see how you were going to think about Rory's story, because Rory's story is still going.
His story.
And we'll find out more about his story.
His story.
On the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
It is a little like me doing my Celine Dion impression, because it's in the sand.
It's Shakira.
That one is, yeah. But in this case, it's.
I guess Celine Dion and Shakira, like that, the way they, where their throat sits is not too different.
Yeah, I also, if I pitched it up a little bit higher, I think it can be a decent Ariana. Man on it.
Hey, folks. Thanks for checking out another episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. I just got off a plane that was delayed 3 hours, so now I'm recording this at 2 a.m. and trying not to go insane. Please like and subscribe. Please follow us on Blue Sky, Threads, Twitter, and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. If you feel pity for me in this moment of strife, please subscribe to us on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor. You can get episodes of this show early and get your name in the credits, like our current Big Daddy Daleks, Andrew Blewett, and David Gansel. I think those guys are pretty neat. Anyway, I need to go to bed now. Next week we'll be looking at the big finale of this season, so we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Who's Days.